Hi, welcome to Picayune Conversations. I'm Calvin.
And Lindsay.
And today we're going to talk about something that's, I think, pretty practical. It's a little, also a little bit funny. We've got this goofy little metaphor that we like to use. But I want to maybe just introduce this by talking about this principle that a mentor of ours has given to us. We're both mental health counselors, if you've not listened to our to us before. Our mentor has this saying where he says that a good rule to start with for good mental health is to not make things worse.
Maybe you can't make them better, but don't make them worse.
Yeah, and could you give a quick example before we get to the metaphor of what that would look like?
Let's say you didn't get the job that you wanted, that you thought you deserved.
Mm-hmm.
In order to feel better, perhaps you go get sloshed at the nearest bar. You could probably subjectively say you feel better, but objectively I would say it's not like good for you. It's not going to be ultimately very useful to you.
Okay, right. So maybe you can't control not getting the job, and that is just going to suck to some degree.
Yeah, but now you're hungover.
Yeah, now you're hungover and jobless.
And okay. Jobless.
Yeah. So one way that we do that, I mean, so that's kind of like that's a great, like really solid behavioral example, but there's also, we do this psychologically, we do this cognitively, where there's something that kind of, it just stinks and it is kind of verifiably unpleasant, uncomfortable, hard, painful, maybe even. But then we do these, we pile on with what we make of this event or experience that happens to us. So I don't know if there's an example that comes to mind for you of how that would work. Here's one that comes to mind for me. So let's say that I'm really eager to spend time with someone and I call them and they don't pick up. And then maybe I try again later that day and they don't pick up again. Okay, well this stinks, right? Because I wanna connect with them and I wanna talk and I'm not able to talk and I'm not able to put together plans, which means that maybe then it's less likely that we're actually gonna be able to spend time together, etc. So it just stinks. But then if what I do is I decide here that the reason that they are not picking up is because they don't like me, they think that I am boring, they think I am stupid, they think I am not worthwhile, that they are annoyed by my phone calls, they look down at their phone, oh my gosh, it's Calvin calling.
And so,
and now my experience of my friend not picking up the phone is significantly worse than it would have been if I had decided something else about it.
Yeah, it's not as useful or helpful to you. It's like the metaphor we like to say about if your back is broken, it's not gonna be helpful if you have a backpack and you're adding bricks to it. It's just like, don't add the bricks.
Yeah.
Like, you just need to do that.
Yeah.
I was thinking like the example, but I couldn't articulate it, was like, if I was like in an argument, like with my husband or something, and I really want to just, you know, but I know that my tongue is pretty forked. Like, I'm not going to say those things. It's going to make it worse.
Yeah.
It's going to make it worse. So I'm going to like bow out and then it'll be on me to come back to the conversation. But yeah.
Yeah.
It tends to be one where I reroute.
Yeah.
It feels sharp.
Now, I want us to talk about this metaphor that we both have used sometimes with our clients. This is just, it really is a kind of a goofy metaphor. Would it be okay if I told a little bit of kind of the origin story behind this
sure.
metaphor? So so I'm working with a client and I, of course, I'm not going to share any like specific details about my work with this client, but we were talking about, my client was in a social situation and there were some people who were just being very, they were being very inconsiderate and he felt unsafe as a result of this inconsiderate behavior from these folks around him. Very understandable, by the way. Like I don't mind, it made sense to me that he was bothered by this and even that he felt a bit unsafe. But then here's what else he did. He added on, they didn't care if I lived or died. And what do you make of that? You know, when he says that, what do you imagine then that does to him emotionally?
Yeah, he's assuming that they were acting out of malice, that they had only bad things in store for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, which makes it more scary. Yeah. And so here's the metaphor that I gave to him. Now, by the way, it's entirely possible that he was true. He was right about this, that these folks really were the sociopaths that he experienced them to be. I think it's highly unlikely based on what we know about prevalence research.
Statistically not likely.
Sociopaths and psychopaths. Although, you know, if you look on social media, you know, everybody and their uncle is a narcissist and a sociopath, but actual like empirical prevalence research, which shows this is quite rare. Okay, it's possible. But here's what's more likely is that they were just being inconsiderate. And so it's not that their inconsiderate behavior doesn't matter. But I explained it to him like this. I said, I want you to imagine, okay, that you are thrown into a dark room, okay? And in this dark room, there are a bunch of other people, and they all have big, long, you know, horror movie butcher knives or, you know, whatever. Big, you know, psycho knives.
Right. Oh, wait.
Oh, my gosh. Look, we have a prop. Okay, so one of these. Okay, can you put that down?
It's about trust.
So you get thrown. This is a weird metaphor, I'm realizing. So you get thrown into this room, and everybody else, you know, let's say there's 10 other people in there, and they are scooted into the picture, so you're not on the margins. You're thrown in there, and they've all got these knives, okay? Now, here's the choice, okay? You get to go into a dark room with 10 klutzes, or you get to go into a dark room full of serial killers. The thing is that no matter what room you go into, you're probably going to get stabbed, yeah? Mm-hmm.
You're going to get hurt.
But the experience is not the same. It is a much, much more frightening experience to be thrown into a room where people are truly maliciously looking for opportunities to harm you, to hurt you, and that when they do, they are thrilled about this. They are enjoying this.
There's malice.
There's proper malice. Whereas, okay, if you're in a room with a bunch of klutzes who have knives, you probably are like really going to get hurt. And I'm not gonna you know, paint a pretty picture and say, oh, but it's gonna be all right. Like, I don't know, maybe it could be really bad. But that is a fundamentally different experience. And so when he pasted this malice onto folks, he gave them what maybe we could refer to from this point forward as just kind of an uncharitable view.
That's the word I was looking for earlier.
Of other people.
Uncharitable.
Life becomes a lot more scary and a lot more unmanageable, and it puts distance between us and other people. So, I mean, that's kind of how I have used the metaphor. How have you used it?
I use it in a lot of ways now, just because when I find a good one, I use the crap out of it. I love to use it with couples when we're in the like reorientation stage of giving each other the benefit of the doubt. It comes along with like mutual trust and respect, and you have to have the courage to communicate and be assertive, knowing that it might not go the way that you want. But that's part of what I love about courage. So I keep it simpler just for my brain, because I don't know how your brain keeps all of that straight. But there are two rooms. One is a dark room, and you're in there with a klutz. In the other room, pitch dark room, you're in there with a serial killer. Can agree in both rooms, you're going to get hurt. And they're like, yeah. Two vastly different experiences, though. In this room, he cuts you, and you're like, how? Jeez, that hurt. But you don't assume he did it on purpose. And he's still responsible. Like, he has to take accountability for hurting you. Mm-hmm. But it's very different than if you get cut in this room and you're like, you meant to do that. You totally meant to do that. And I can't think of how many instances in my life that I've been like, you meant to do that. Like, you meant to do that. When the reality is most people are not serial killers. Like, this is what I say to individuals. I'm like, sometimes it can be helpful to remember that people aren't going at it with malice in their heart. They're not serial killers. They're just klutzes. So sometimes we can, like, have a little, what's it called? The little, not callback? Session callback where I'm like, were they giving off serial killer vibes or klutz vibes? And they know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But it really helps when giving people the benefit of the doubt. That if you're like, I don't think you want to hurt me. Doesn't mean you won't hurt me. But thinking of the metaphor, I don't know, it just offers more compassion and empathy.
Well, and as you're talking, I think that's just it's really beautiful work. I think as you're talking, what sticks out to me is also this, right? That if you alert a klutz to the fact that they have hurt you, they go, oh my goodness. And their response is to, you know, help you bandage up the wound,
yeah,
and to, you know, put the knife down, you know, and to be perhaps a little bit more cautious and to respond. And so there is this rationale for letting somebody know that you have been hurt, because they then will respond. Whereas, let's say, you know, you let a serial killer know, like, ouch, you know, that hurts. And they say, exactly. That's the point. And so when we assume malice, the other thing that we do is that we do not communicate very well that we are hurt and that things are not going well. And when we do that, then that also denies us the opportunity, or it denies, let's say within the context of a couple, it denies our partner the opportunity to respond and to change and to adjust and to reconnect with us. Which, by the way, this is another way that people make things worse in life, is that, okay, people are going to mistreat each other.
100%.
They're going to do that. And so that's just part of life. But then what happens, right, is that we kind of shut down and we kind of privatize that hurt. And we say, well, it's mine. And then we don't speak up. We don't assert ourselves. We don't do it. And then what happens is that the person who's mistreated us is under the impression, no matter how ridiculously, they're under the impression that's an acceptable way to treat us. And so then they keep it up. And so then we're not just getting mistreated once, we're getting mistreated again and again and again and again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what do you think the takeaway for our listeners would be with this idea?
Well, one of mine is I just know that most people are just klutzing around. And I think they need to learn to not maybe be carrying butcher knives like I am around. So you're less likely to hurt people. But that if you do reconcile that, and that most people, they're just trying to fumble their way through life like the klutz in a dark room. They're not meaning to hurt you, but they do anyway. They're like, that's just part of it. If you have to go into the rooms no matter what, like, you're going to get hurt.
Yeah. And I guess this is something that we would both really tell clients too, is that acknowledging that does not invalidate the hurt that you are feeling. No. By any, like, it's...
You're still hurt.
Still hurt.
Yeah.
It is still a problem. It still has to be addressed. It's still not good. It's not this, like, Pollyanna view of the world where just everything is wonderful and everybody really is nice at heart. It's not that. It's that people are clumsy. You're clumsy. I'm clumsy. Yeah. We're all clumsy. And
but in that room, it offers cooperation.
Yeah.
The other one precisely. Does not.
Yeah.
Like, one is, I'm better than you and I'm going to hurt you.
Yeah.
For no good reason.
Yeah. The only other thing I would want to add, right, is that we want to be clear about this too, that some people do not have good intent. And by the way, that doesn't make them sociopaths or serial killers either. Okay. Like, I'm not a sociopath or a serial killer. I promise you, I'm not. And there are times that I do genuinely have malice in my heart. It's
same.
Like, that happens. So again, it's not that we want people to turn their brain off and say, oh, well, nothing could ever be malicious. There is such a thing as malice. It's that we need to kind of, when we assume that things are malicious, we make life unnecessarily painful and frightening for ourselves. Whereas if we just watch, hey, I'm going to alert this person to the fact that I am hurt, and then I will watch and I will see what they do. And, you know, I'm not saying like one chance, right? Like, there's, you know, sometimes people wake up on the wrong side of the bed and they're not very responsive to our hurt or whatever. But in the big picture, is this person who has hurt you, are they responsive? Do they seem to care? Are they willing to make changes? Are they willing to apologize? Which you can listen to our episode from season one on genuine apologies.
It's a big one.
There's all kinds of things there. It's not that malice doesn't exist. It's that there's no sense in assuming that something is malicious when we really just don't have enough information to make that assessment yet.
It's also hopeful to assume that. Having the hope for your partner is just inherently cooperative. It's saying, like, I want our team to do well. So like, why would it be helpful for me to assume that? That'd be like assuming that our kicker missed it on purpose. It's like, I don't think he did. I think he was just like having a bad day or having a bad moment. Like, I don't think it's really about him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that that probably kind of sums up the idea for folks. And if you have any follow-up questions about this, if you're a listener or a viewer, I guess if you're watching this on YouTube, and you have questions or follow-ups, you let us know, you respond to us, and we'll do our best in future episodes to maybe make a little bit of time at the beginning of episodes, every episode, if we have a question or something, and we can respond to those briefly.
Okay, on that, great segue. Reminding you to send us stuff that you want us to cover. How would be a really good way of doing that? Them just emailing or commenting on the video?
Yeah, we have a Google form that they can fill out, and that link will be in the description for this episode, whether you're on YouTube or listen through a podcast platform or whatever. The link will be in that. Please also subscribe either to our YouTube channel or our subscribe to the podcast, whatever. Those subscriptions are actually really helpful to us to get our stuff out to a broader audience. So, oh, and you can leave us reviews too if you want, but only if they're good reviews, please.
I think it would be really fun to read bad reviews.
Okay, fair enough. Five star only, okay? One or five star only.
One or five star.
Because the ones will be hilarious. It's like it's like American Idol, you know, the auditions. The first episode, they only ever show the really great folks who are going to make it, and then the folks who...
like, totally lost.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. There you go. So, one or five star, please, if you're going to review. And we will see you next time. Thank you very much.